Let's return to Numbers chapter 34, and let's just go ahead and go all the way back to verse number 1. One of the things I really regret about this being radio and audio only rather than video is because we don't have the ability to do maps like all of us are familiar with. Now, they did do maps back in the ancient times, but more often than not, in the records like what we're seeing right here, they would just simply give a verbal description. And so we're having to wrestle our way through this verbal description of the promised land that is going to be subdivided during this inheritance phase of Israel coming into the land. And so I'm going to try my best again to just give you a little bit more succinct visual idea of where you should be looking at a map of the Middle East in order to understand where these lines go. So chapter 34, he who is spoke to Moses saying, command the people of Israel, say to them, when you enter the land of Canaan, this is the land that shall fall to you for an inheritance, the land of Canaan as defined by its borders. Your south side shall be from the wilderness of Zin alongside Edom, and your southern border shall run from the end of the Salt Sea on the east. Now that's the south side of the Dead Sea. Now the modern day Dead Sea, we mostly are looking at the North Basin. The South Basin is being mined for all of its material resources. But the ancient time period that we're looking at, there was a South Bay there. So from that Salt Sea South Base, your border shall turn south of the ascent of Akrabim. So that's the ascent of scorpions. Don't know exactly where that is. Cross to Zin. Its limit shall be south of Kadesh Barnea. Now, in my estimation, Kadesh Barnea is about 40 miles south from the south end of the Dead Sea. And it's right there in this flat stretch of land from the Gulf of Aqaba up to the south basin of the Dead Sea. And so it's about a little bit less than halfway south along that stretch. And then it's going to follow the Wadi system that is right there up to its source on the ridgeline to the west. And then it says this, then it shall go on to Hazar Adar and pass along to Azmon, and the border shall turn from Azmon to the Brook of Egypt, and its limit shall be at the sea. Now, we know the Brook of Egypt. It is the Wadi al-Arish. It dumps into the Mediterranean about 25 miles, I think, it's west, southwest from the southern end of the Gaza Strip. It was the traditional southern border of Canaan. And so it's also a watershed. So if you start at the watershed by Kadesh Barnea and go up to its source at the ridgeline, then on the other side of the ridgeline, you jump onto the drainage source for the Wadi al-Arish, that goes over to the Med. And so that's the south border of Canaan proper. Verse number 6, for the western border, you shall have the Great Sea and its coast. This shall be your western border. Nice and easy. The coastline of the Med. This shall be your northern border. From the Great Sea, which is the ancient name for the Med, you shall draw a line to Mount Hor. Now, we don't know where Mount Hor is. We do know for a fact that Tyre in the ancient world, and Sidon, were Phoenician cities on the coast of the Mediterranean to the north of the Promised Land. And the Israelis were specifically told that the properties belonging to Tyre and Sidon were not their property. So this borderline apparently starts going eastward from just south of Tyre. And it continues eastward past wherever Mount Hor is until, verse 8, you draw a line to Lebo Hamat. Now, Lebo Hamat is the entrance of Hamat, and we've talked about this before. It is the entry point, the southern entry point of the Beka Valley that stretches all the way up to the city of Hamat, which is not very far from the southern bend, or from the bend in the Euphrates River up to the north. It's all part of Haram, or Aram, up that direction. And so this Lebo Hamat is located a little bit north and west of where we know the city of Dan is today. And that helps us to understand why Dan was often referred to as the northern extremity of the land of Israel, because it was the farthest north official city of Israel. And so it's not very far from Lebo Hamat. Now, these other things that are mentioned in connection with that should be kept in mind of, you know, we're in the general vicinity of Lebo Hamat. The limit of the border shall be at Zedad, and then the border shall extend to Ziphron, and its limit shall be to Hazar and Nun. This shall be your northern border. It seems as if that takes us over to the foothills of Mount Hermon, which is where Dan and Caesarea Philippi were located in biblical times. And so the borders then are going to turn southward at this point. You shall draw a line for your eastern border from Hazar Enan to Shepham, and the border shall go down from Shepham to Riblah on the east side of Ain, and the border shall go down and reach to the shoulder of the Sea of Kinneret on the east. Now we know exactly where the Sea of Kinneret is. It's Harp Sea or Harp Lake. We know it better by its New Testament name, the Sea of Galilee. And so the Jordan River dumps into the Sea of Galilee on the northeast corner. The Jordan River, the upper Jordan River, has four main sources, but two of the sources that we are very familiar with start at the city of Dan and the city of Caesarea Philippi, which I've just mentioned, at the foot of the slopes of Mount Hermon. So it would appear that the border in the upper Jordan Valley parallels the eastern side of the upper Jordan Valley and then tags the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. And then verse 12 says, the border shall go down to the Jordan, and its limit shall be at the Salt Sea. So that brings us down to the top of the Dead Sea. And then the Dead Sea, of course, is where we started our borders, the south bay of the Dead Sea. So now we've come all the way around. So that is the official promised land that the Israelis are going to go in and occupy, and which they are going to subdivide in their inheritance. We know, though, it has now been appended with the eastern annexed territories that go from the plains of Moab on the northeast corner of the Dead Sea all the way up the eastern side of the Jordan Valley, the Sea of Galilee highlands, which we call the Golan Heights, and then all the way up again to touch the southern foothills belonging to Mount Hermon. So that is the annexed territory that has been added to the original Promised Land. Verse 13, Moses commanded the people of Israel, saying, "This is the land that you shall inherit by lot." So it's going to be a divine lot. God decides which tribes get which sections and which families inside those tribes get which little family farms. "This is the land that you shall inherit by lot, which he who is commanded to give to the nine tribes and to the half tribe." Now that's the Promised Land side, the western side of the Jordan. Nine of the tribes and then half of the tribe of Manasseh will be granted territorial designations in that Promised Land that was just described. Verse 14, "For the tribe of the people of Reuben by fathers' houses and the tribe of the people of Gad by their fathers' houses have received their inheritance, and also the half-tribe of Manasseh." So those guys have already been told where their territory is going to be in the annexed side on the east side of the Jordan. "The two tribes and the half-tribe have received their inheritance beyond the Jordan, east of Jericho, toward the sunrise." Now let's talk about the logistics of dividing the land up. Verse 16, "He who is spoke to Moses, saying, 'These are the names of the men who shall divide the land to you for inheritance. Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun.'" That makes perfect sense, because Eleazar is the religious leader. Joshua is the civil leader, the government leader, the military leader for Israel as they go into the Promised Land. Verse 18, "You shall take one chief from every tribe to divide the land for inheritance. These are the names of the men of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh," which is interesting because he went on the original touring of the Promised Land 38 and a half years earlier, almost 39 years earlier, to help identify the terrain in such a way as to facilitate dividing it up amongst the tribes. So he knows what is there to be divided. Now, his 11 companions, 10 of them are dead because of their sinfulness. The 11th is Joshua, and he's been promoted, shall we say, to a leadership position as the civil or governmental or military leader of Israel. So he will be replaced on this list, as well as the other guys on this list from the earlier survey crew. We've got the names of them. I'm not going to read all of them through here. You can read them on your own. But we get down to verse number 29. "These are the men whom he who is commanded to divide the inheritance for the people of Israel in the land of Canaan." So they've been tapped for this responsibility, but they will carry it out later once they get into the Promised Land. We'll talk more about the actual facilitation of this once we get to those passages. Chapter 35. "He who is spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho." So we're still in the last couple of months of the 40th year of the Exodus. Moses still has a few more responsibilities to take care of as the intercessor between God and the people and the people with God. And so one of the things that he has to pass on is a legal process that needs to be put in place in connection with the dividing up of the land. So this is what he's told. "Command the people of Israel to give to the Levites some of the inheritance of their possession as cities for them to dwell in. So the 12 tribes are all going to get very specifically designated areas of inheritance. The Levites are not going to get that. Instead, they are going to get designated cities scattered throughout the 12 tribes, because their responsibility is to represent God and God's law all through the tribes. They're going to be the local experts on the law. They'll be amongst the judges that will make sure that the law is followed. At least that's the plan that's supposed to be in place. So each one of the all of the Levites are going to be assigned to one of these cities that are being designated here. And those cities are further described in this way. You shall give to the Levites pasture lands around the cities. So you don't just give them a city. You have to give them property around the city so that they can have their own animals and grow their own crops and things of that nature. The cities shall be theirs to dwell in, and their pasture land shall be for their cattle and for their livestock and for all their beasts. The pasture lands of the cities which you shall give to the Levites shall reach from the wall of the city outward. Now, our English Standard Version and other English versions at this point follow the Masoretic text, and they write 1,000 cubits all around. The Greek Old Testament, which is actually an older translation than the Masoretic text, it actually has 2,000 cubits at this point, which matches what comes up in verse 5. You shall measure outside the city on the east side 2,000 cubits, the south side 2,000 cubits, the west side 2,000 cubits, the north side 2,000 cubits, with the city being in the middle. This shall be to them as pasture land for their cities. So I believe the Greek text has the better number at this point in that particular verse. Now, how far is that? Well, using the long cubit, which is what I prefer, 2,000 cubits is about 3,450 feet. Now remember, it's 2,000 cubits each direction on the compass. So when you allow for, you know, the city itself, you're effectively talking about an area that's about 1.5 miles by 1.5 miles squared. So you got a city at the center, and then about 1,440 square acres that belong to that city all around. So that's a very good place for the Levites to be headquartered, stretched throughout all of the different tribes. So they will be a ready resource for dealing with matters of the law, matters of religiousness as well. Verse number 6, the cities that you give to the Levites shall be the 6 cities of refuge where you shall permit the manslayer to flee, and in addition to them you shall give 42 cities. All the cities that you shall give the Levites shall be 48 with their pasture lands. And as for the cities that you shall give from the possession of the people of Israel, from the larger tribes you shall take many, from the smaller tribes you shall take few, each in proportion to the inheritance that is inherits, since shall give of its cities to the Levites. This is all very pragmatic here. First of all, let's talk about the cities of refuge, just briefly, because we'll see this in more detail later. The cities of refuge will need to be well-spaced on both sides of the Jordan River. So we're going to get 3 on the east and 3 on the west. No 2 cities of refuge will be more than 60 miles apart from each other, because That means that every person living in the Promised Land and in the annexed territories are always within one day's journey, roughly 30 miles at the max, of a city of refuge. The other 42 cities are going to also be spaced around. Now, since some of the tribes have a larger area that they occupy because of terrain, they'll end up with a few more Levitical cities in their tribal area, because these Levitical cities need to be well spaced in order to accomplish their purpose of keeping a representation of God's people, that is, professional people, all over the tribes. Okay, so verse number 9. Let's talk a little bit more specifically about the cities of refuge. And we'll see more about this later in the book of Deuteronomy, which is coming up next, and in the actual application once they get into the Promised Land. But this is the beginning of it. Verse 9. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel, say to them, when you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall select cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the manslayer who kills any person without intent may flee to them." Now this harkens back to the law, the core of the law, that murder, the intentional killing of a person, that's an automatic death penalty. But the accidental killing of a person, even in anger, that is not a capital crime. It has a different way that it is dealt with. And so the purpose of the cities of refuge is to make sure that every person who ends up killing somebody else, but they have done it, they feel, accidentally, will have a place that they can go to get a fair trial. And that place needs to be like a change of venue, if you will, from their home territory. Because unfortunately, as we all know, local people often react emotionally at the loss of somebody in their community. And the knee-jerk reaction often is, we need to execute the person that did this. Regardless of the circumstances. And so there needs to be a place where that person can go and get a fair trial. Okay, so that's the point of it. Verse 12, the cities shall be for you a refuge from the avenger. Now, do not misunderstand the language here. The avenger here is going to be a person in the local community designated by the authorities to execute justice on someone that murders someone else. And so the avenger comes with the full authority of the local community to arrest and execute the person for their crime. But if that person has fled to a city of refuge, then the avenger of that legal community back home does not have authority there to carry out his task. That's the point. So the city shall be for you a refuge from the avenger, that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation for judgment. So until he has an official trial in a change of venue from his home territory. The cities that you shall give, verse 13. And the cities that you give shall be for your six cities of refuge. You shall give three cities beyond the Jordan, three cities in the land of Canaan to be cities of refuge. These six cities shall be for refuge for the people of Israel and for the stranger and for the sojourner among them, that anyone who kills any person without intent may flee there. So we've seen as we've gone through the laws that the laws are not just for Israelis. The laws apply for all people living inside the land of Israel. So even non-Israelis or visitors passing through, they have a right to be protected from the avenger if they go to the city of refuge for a change of venue trial. That's equality. Okay, and that's very important to justice. Verse 16. And we're running out of time, so we'll just get started on this. But if he struck him down with an iron object so that he died, he's a murderer. This is going to be information for the judges to consider. It is kind of assumed if they used an implement made of iron, that they were intending to kill the guy. The murderer shall be put to death. If he struck him down with a stone tool that could cause death and he died, he's a murderer, because that's a very lethal instrument. The murderer shall be put to death. If he struck him down with a wooden tool that could cause death and he died, he is a murderer. So, I mean, if he stabbed him with something made of wood, that's pretty obvious. It was a lethal object, and that is not something that you can do accidentally. The avenger of blood shall himself put the murderer to death. When he meets him, he shall put him to death. So that gets back to the thing that I described earlier. He is an agent of the local authorities back home to extract judgment against the person who committed the crime of murder. And so once he catches up with him, he can carry out that sentence legally. Mark your place. We'll come back to this next time we have opportunity to get into the Word.